The sponsor of this week's episode of the Mobile Dev Memo Podcast is Clarisites. Tired of waiting for updates to slow dashboards that don't tell you the complete story? Tired of manually aggregating data on spreadsheets to understand your campaign performance? What if you could access all the data you need in one place, without dependencies on SQL, spreadsheets, or valuable data team resourcing? That's why performance marketers at Uber, HelloFresh, Delivery Hero, and many others trust Clarisites to run marketing reporting, automating all manual work and helping them focus on insights that drive performance. What used to take weeks now takes minutes with Clarisites. Go to clarisites.com/demo to try it out for free. You'll see why thousands of performance marketers trust Clarisites every day.
The problem is that the distinction needs to be drawn between the competence of the economists and the correctness of their analysis.
Welcome to the Mobile Dev Memo Podcast. I am your co-host, Eric Seufert. I say co-host because this episode represents the first in a new series that I'm calling the Mobile Dev Memo Canon. In this series, each week, I'll select an article from the Mobile Dev Memo archives that I'll discuss with my friend and the other co-host for the series, Stuart Johnson. Stuart, take it away.
Hi, Eric. Thank you very much. It is true. You did ask me to host a few episodes of the Mobile Dev Memo Podcast, and I thank you for that. Without any further ado, I would like to just jump right into it. And the article that we'd like to talk about today is from June of 2016, Why Analytics Teams Fail. Now, it's going to be an interesting topic because I think it's still relevant today, but I'd also like to point out how things might have changed over this time. So without any further ado, let's start off with what is perhaps the most basic of all topics here to wade our way into this topic. If you are a company involved in any way with mobile advertising, where do you get your information about your customers? Or put another way, how do you know how to market your product?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great place to start. So there are sort of two sets of data that exist with any sort of like scaled consumer tech company. And they used to be much more cohesive than they are now. You know, listeners will understand that there was have been a broad set of privacy restrictions that have been implemented over the last few years. But this data set used to basically be fluid and cohesive. And now it's sort of like exists as two disparate data sets, right? And so one of these data sets is the performance of a company's advertising as sort of recorded or observed by the ad channels that it works with, right? So you have ad performance that exists entirely in this data set that's observed and captured by the ad channels that deliver the ads, right? And these are things like clicks, and these are things like audience data. And then you have engagement data and basically on product data that is observed and recorded by the company itself in its own product, right? Now, for purely, you know, product optimization purposes, you can use that singular data set, right? That is generated by the product itself and do things like optimize engagement or optimize retention, optimize monetization, make sure that the FATUI or the first time user, the funnel is like perfectly optimized. But that doesn't give you a lot of information about how to acquire more users like the ones that you see perform the best, right? Best, you know, being dictated by like whatever metric that you care about. And right. So the kind of key to integrating these data sets or using them both in such a way that like kind of propels the business forward is to try to merge them, is to try to match them, is to try to build some sort of connective tissue between them that allows you to know, hey, when we acquire this user from this place or using this ad or on this channel, they are a really good user. And when we acquire a user from some other channel, they actually don't perform that well. And actually what we really want to do is we want to make sure that the product that we're optimizing when we're making these optimizations is sort of being tuned for the users that we can acquire that are really good, right? So if there's users that we can't sort of acquire, we can't reach them with advertising, well, then the sort of onboarding of those users, bringing those users into our product is kind of outside of our control, right? And there's not really much we can do to increase the number of those users that we get, whereas I have control over my marketing spend, right? And so if I could kind of build this, you know, connective tissue between these two data sets, well, then I can actually drive my business forward. I can build a feedback loop that improves the business over time.
But I'm just curious about these users that are beyond your scope that you can't attain. What do you do about them? Do you just write them off or do you come back to them at a later date?
Well, no. I mean, so if I think about users that you can't reach with any sort of like deliberate method, in a lot of ways, I'm talking about users that come in through virality. So like through some sort of like viral viral awareness, right? So like a lot of times these are considered to be like what's known as organic users, right? So a user that onboarded to my product kind of apropos of nothing that I did, right? Well, that's not something that I can control. I mean, there are ways to sort of indirectly control that, right? So if I'm growing my user base and I notice that I have some degree of viral adoption, well, then that helps me to spend more money on advertising, right? Because you could view those viral users as just like a benefit or a bonus. Like it's kind of a premium, right? It's a premium on the money that I've spent on advertising because these users are essentially free to me, right? And so like one way to kind of to indirectly control that is just say, look, I'm going to apply this premium to the ad spend, right? Or actually, you'd actually be a discount, right? I'm going to apply a discount to my ad spend because when I buy one user or acquire one user, I don't like to speak in like overly transactional terms. I don't like to say buy a user. That sounds kind of insensitive, but
outdated.
It's outdated or just weird or inhumane or something. But but if I'm running advertising and a user adopts my product as a result of that advertising, actually, more than one user has adopted my product. There's some sort of bonus that I apply to that sort of acquisition cost, right? So like I'm getting more than one user in my product as a result of these ads. And so that's one way to sort of indirectly control that is just to acknowledge that, right? Say, hey, I can actually spend more than I'm spending because I'm getting more than just that singular user. I'm actually getting some of their friends. I'm getting some fraction of a friend. If I break this down to like to the single user level or my cohort is getting many more users than just those who have adopted my product as a direct result of seeing the ad. The cohort's being joined by or is being augmented by some users that just heard about it, right? Because the more people I onboard to the product through ads, if it's a very viral product or it's a very social product, they're going to tell their friends. And so their friends are going to join my product. And so I need to sort of recognize that fact when I'm sort of budgeting my advertising spend.
I'm curious about that because is there like a specific equation that you would use? For example, I remember before we had internet at all, most organic advertising was done by word of mouth. And I remember this metric that said that if you have one dissatisfied customer at an American restaurant or grocery store, they're going to tell people and they're going to tell people. And that's basically going to result in a loss of approximately 100 customers for one bad customer experience. Do you have something that's kind of the opposite? Like you said that somebody comes in randomly because something is viral and then maybe you get one of their friends as well. Is there like some specific metric that you could use to describe that?
Yeah, well, I think the standard metric is kind of like K factor, right? I've never actually seen K factor be calculated in the other direction. That's kind of like an interesting idea. But really the idea of K factor is like, okay, well, what is the sort of bonus I get on my ad spend, right? Like what's the organic contribution that is delivered to me on top of the sort of like natural direct effects of my advertising? But I mean, that phenomenon exists in like the digital, you know, the sort of digital products realm too, right? Because people can leave reviews, right? So if I, you know, acquire a user, if I onboard some users and they hate the product, well, not only can they just tell their friends like, oh, this product was horrible, but they'll write a review. I mean, the app stores have reviews, but even like Amazon and just online marketplaces have reviews. And so, you know, if you're not delivering a sort of like valuable experience to users, well, then they have methods that they can use to sort of to warn potential other users about it, right? And so you have to be very mindful of that fact, right? So I think it's actually an interesting idea that you could potentially apply K factor as a negative force on your user acquisition efforts. But I think if you're getting to the point of having to do that, you've got sort of bigger problems. You really should focus on making your product more valuable and more appealing.
I also liked what he said, we have methods we can use. That sounds kind of threatening. Makes me think of Yelp somehow. Like everybody, I'm sure that all business owners would love reviews from Yelp. It's just kind of unwelcome. But so let's say that you have all this information that you've collected from various means. How do you process it? Like who is responsible for processing this information in the company? Is it an individual or a team, a department? So how does it work?
Yeah, well, so I mean, that's kind of the crux of the article, right? Is what is this team? What is the analytics team? And what should they be set up to do, right? And so like, you know, generally in a company, like it depends on the scale of the company, but like if you're thinking about, you know, a company of some sort of like, you know, reasonable size, you'd probably have a dedicated analytics team and their job, their purpose, right, is to sort of collect all this data, to build the infrastructure, to collect all this data, to collate all this data, and to build some set of tools that yield interesting insights from the data that can be used to improve the product or to improve the marketing or to improve the workflow between product and marketing, right? But the whole purpose of this team should be to make tools available to the entire organization such that the business is improved as a result of their existence, right? The fact that these tools exist improves the prospects of the business. And that should be the sort of like highest purpose of an analytics team is to do that. And not just the tools, not just the provision of the tools, but the provision of the insight, right? Not just the fact that the tools exist and then people, you know, kind of are on their own with navigating them and surfacing insights, but that the insights are surfaced through the tools in a way that is very convenient, in a way that's very natural, right? And in a way that doesn't require a lot of work from the people that are using the tools, from the customers of these tools. So that's sort of the purpose of an analytics team. It's to make these insights available to the broader organization such that they can be utilized to improve the product and to improve the prospects of this company.
Well, if you have all these people on a team, I assume that each one is going to have their own specialty. And I'm kind of thinking like an A team, for example. You have one person who's good at one thing and another, they're good at something completely different. So people who don't really understand what an analytics team is still, exactly how it works, who would be on these teams? What are just a couple of the titles of the positions of people on these teams?
Well, it's sort of broad range, right? So, and you know, a team might be, you know, set up in any number of different ways. It might be organized in any number of different ways, but you have kind of a couple of different roles that are pretty critical, right? So one is like data engineering. So these are the people that are building the systems to collect the data, to organize the data, to process the data. And when you're talking about like a scaled consumer tech product, I mean, you could be talking about a massive volume of data that you're collecting every single day, right? And so first of all, you need a method of collecting it, right? And that method, I mean, collecting this data from the product is often called instrumentation. So I'm going to build some sort of touch point that exists either in the product or on like a backend server that the product can like send information to in a way that was like deliberately identified, right? So like pieces of information that have been deliberately identified, that's called instrumentation. So like deliberately identifying something, some piece of information that you want to collect from within the product, that's called instrumentation. I'm going to instrument this thing, right? And then, so that's one thing. It's like you need to create a way for the product developers to do that, right? And maybe that's what's in the mobile app context. That could be like an SDK, you know, on the web, it could be some sort of like JavaScript library, but the product development team needs the opportunity to just flag something that they think is important that they want to keep track of, right? So that's one thing. You need to provide those tools. The second is you need to collect them, right? So you need some sort of backend service that just stores that data. It might just be a simple activity log, event log. So you're just writing these events kind of in plain text in a log. And that's, you know, most probably how it's done. You might write them directly to a relational database. You probably wouldn't do that for a very scaled product. You just write the plain text logs. And so that's collecting the data, right? So this is all still data engineering. The third is you need to like collate the data, right? And you need to organize the data and you need to aggregate the data, right? So just having a giant log of events for a single day, that's not really useful, right? For much. You need to organize it. You need to clean it, make sure that you're not getting any bad data, any corrupted data, any like partial data in there, any duplicate data. That's a big process, right? To do that, to clean the data. And then you need to aggregate the data, right? So to put it into kind of counts, right? So just knowing that one specific thing happened, probably not that interesting if you've got a billion things happening every single day. What you really want to do is you want to dimensionalize the data and aggregate it such like, hey, I know that users in the US, right, on iPhones did this specific thing a million times today versus knowing that overall globally, everyone did these a billion times a day. Okay, users in the iOS ecosystem in the US did this a million times a day. And that's kind of more interesting, right? And you might aggregate this in multiple ways. You might aggregate it across the entirety of the user base, right? So it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna organize this data across these dimensions that describe the whole user base. You might also organize it at the level of an individual user. So it's like, well, overall, these users, this group of users, this bunch of users that, you know, I might define by the dimensions of iPhone users in the US, right, did these things. Now, what I also might want to do is say, hey, this user, Eric, he did this thing today, right? So now he did it yesterday too, and he did it the day before. And Eric, you know, I have like a sort of, I have a history of these things that this user did in my product, right? So I might want to organize this data and aggregate this data is sort of like across from two different perspectives. One is at the overall user base perspective, but the other is at the level of every individual user, right? So that's the process of like aggregating it. And then you want to make it available in some way. And so this is still kind of data engineering, right? So everything I've, you know, discussed up till this point is still data engineering. Now here's where we have maybe a little bit of overlap with other roles, but I want to make this data available, right? So I might just make it available in a relational database and that's it. And you're on your own. And then the data engineer's job is done. But I might also want to make it available in some sort of tool, right? Like an online tool, a web interface or in some sort of like analytics application, like a Tableau or something, or a Looker. And so then I probably have to adapt the data to work really well with that. And so at that point, the data engineer's job is probably done. And now I need people to engage with the data, interpret the data. Now this is like an analyst, right? So an analyst, they might set up dashboards, right? They might have some sort of report that they've built that just connects to this data store, whatever it is, and pulls the data in, and it gets organized and visualized in a way that helps them make decisions, or helps them interpret what's happening to identify themes, right? And then pass that along to the product team, or just make that available, right, to the product team. And they're probably the ones, or you know, not organizing the data itself, but presenting the data in a way that's easy to interpret, right? That's analysts. You'd call that like an analyst, right? Now there's another role that, you know, overlaps with, you know, analyst roles in some interesting ways, or ways that are maybe difficult to define, ambiguous ways, and that's called a data scientist. Where I distinguish between an analyst and a data scientist is an analyst organizes data and they present data that's meant to be interpreted. A data scientist, to my mind, uses data to make predictions and to build data products, right? So a data product might be something that is actually available in the core consumer product itself. Or the data scientist might just make, which would that be like a recommendation algorithm, right? Like I'm going to make this recommendation algorithm. That's the output of my labor as a data scientist. I'm making this recommendation or this recommendation system available within the product. So when a user goes in the product, they have things that are recommended to them. Well, the data scientist built the back end. They built the tool that makes those available to them on their behalf. And a lot of that's just you know, on the basis of predictions, right? So this user has done these things, and sort of my prediction model, which the data scientist built, it takes their behavior as input. And then outputs things that those users are predicted to enjoy or to engage with, right? So that's kind of the difference between data science. But these are very fuzzy, and there's a lot of overlap. And sometimes the term data scientist is used when it probably shouldn't be. But that's how I would kind of distinguish between those roles. And then you'd have like a leader, right? You'd have a leader of the analytics org, right? And the leader is tasked with just making sure everything runs smoothly, right? So making sure that you know the stakeholders, the consumers of this analytics are getting what they need, right? That the team is staffed well, that the right data is being collected, and that the analytics team is fulfilling its purpose, which is to deliver insights to the broader organization that help to improve the prospects of the company.
That sounds great. And you've described all these different positions in it. It sounds like a well-oiled machine, but there's also this expression that the sum of all the parts are greater than the whole, or something like that. And this article that we were talking about today is why analytics teams fail. From what you just described, you have a team full of extremely competent people, and yet we have the topic. Why would an analytics team fail if they seem to be so competent that they're in their positions?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of reasons, right? And a lot of these are like, call them like interpersonal, right? So if you have a staff of truly exceptional people, and they all understand the role very well, and their sort of purpose is understood across the organization, well, then they're probably set up for success, but there are like factors that they can't control, right? So I would say, you know, like just, you know, the first reason that I present, the first reason that analytics teams fail that I present in the articles is what I call lack of agency and authority, right? So if an analytics function is thought of as a value driver, then it needs to sort of prioritize its own tasks and define its own roadmap. If you look at analytics, not just a cost, right? So, okay, we've got to have this and it costs money, and we just have to accept that cost. But actually, if you look at the analytics team, it's like, well, hey, they're going to surface insights that are going to improve the prospects of our business and help us make more revenue. Well, then they need to have like sort of ownership of their work. They need to understand what they should be doing, and they need to dictate what they should be doing. And they should sort of tell us what they're working on, because I trust them. I trust them to build the stuff that is going to help the product team or whoever, the finance team, make better decisions that improve the prospects of the business. But a lot of times, analytics teams are seen as a cost center, right? And so the way that the broader organization views this team is as someone or as this entity that needs to take orders, right? That needs to be told what to do. Hey, you're a service provider to me. You're not driving revenue. I'm driving the revenue, right? You're providing like a commodity. You're providing a utility, and I'll tell you what to build because I'm the one that ultimately needs to interpret this data to make the decisions that improve the prospects of the business. And so a lot of times an analytics team, for that reason, and this is, I guess you could call this like, you know, organizational philosophy, or you could call it politics, or you could just call it drama, right?
But well, a lot of sounded to me like you were describing an unhappy marriage. Like, I'll tell you what to do. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, but I've seen the sort of relationships break down to a point where, you know, you're probably happy to go home to your marriage at the end of the day. But I kid. But you know, if an analytics team ends up being positioned as like this just sort of reactive service provider, right? Like with respect to product development, meaning the product team sort of operates totally independently without consulting the analytics team about what they should build, but they build things just on the basis of like intuition, right? They sort of ignore the analytics team's potential to sort of surface these insights to drive the prospects of the business forward, to sort of inform what should be built. But instead, if the product team just says, look, we know what to build, we're going to use our intuition, I understand our users, right? Then the analytics team gets forced into this like reactive posturing, and they just have to sort of react to what the product team is doing. And essentially they end up just kind of providing like very superficial metrics, right? Around what the product, around how users are interacting with the product. And so that's problematic, right? So the first reason it's problematic is that in a data-driven organization, you know, the analytics team should have a voice. The analytics team should have some agency in deciding which features are developed in the first place, right? And partly because they're the ones that are organizing the data and parsing the data and delivering insights on the data. And so if they're totally removed from that process, then ultimately like their role will be defined just in the measurement, right? And they'll have no influence over what gets built. And that's problematic, because if you say that you truly are a data-driven org, then you need data. You need these insights. And if you're just making decisions on gut feeling or intuition, well, then you're not a data-driven org. Just because there's data that exists on a spreadsheet or in a report doesn't mean you're a data-driven org. That means you're a data reactive org, or you're a data consuming org. You're not a data-driven org, right? If the analytics team is not actually, you know, proposing insights, or it's not surfacing insights and then proposing them as a feature, you know, on the feature development roadmap. The second is that, you know, when analytics teams are not really empowered to prioritize their own tasks, because they're just accepting tasks from, you know, the product team or whatever, then they just get bogged down with ad hoc analysis, right? Like they can't do the actual meaningful, important work that an analytics team must do in order to improve the commercial prospects of the company, but they just receive requests, like work order type requests, right? They'll receive what are known as tickets to do something. And so a lot of time,
machine.
Yeah, exactly. And really just like a service provider, right? And so a lot of times these requests, they're really for like trivia, right? It's things that might be interesting, but they're really just descriptive, and the product team would like to know it because, hey, why not? That would be an interesting thing to know, right? And so it could be things like, you know, hey, I want to know a count. Give me a count of all users in some country yesterday that did this thing, or give me the average session times for all users in this period who are, you know, sort of united by some characteristic, right? And it's just trivia. It's not insight. Those are just counts or whatever. And so I call that first order analysis. So answers to what questions? That's first order analysis, right? A what question. So what is the size of our user base in South America, right? Like what did users do most commonly before they purchased? Those are what questions. That's first order analysis. And I think what questions generally can't, you know, improve, you know, a product, can't be used, the answers to them can't be used to improve the product, you know, with sort of like much impact, right? And what I see the analytics team's role as really doing is helping to answer why and how questions. That's what I call second order analysis, right? So these are the questions that drive product improvements. So just knowing some trivia about the product, then I'm still having to use intuition as to how to integrate that knowledge into a product improvement, right? So if I have an answer to a what question, it's like, okay, well, that's interesting to know, but how do I respond to that? Right. And then I'm probably just using intuition if this is the way the relationship exists between the product team and the analytics team. But why and how questions provide sort of much more insight, much more value into the process of improving the product, right? These drive product improvements. And I think that the majority of an analytics team's time should be dedicated to answering those questions, right? And so that requires the analytics team, first of all, just be empowered to say no. They need to be able to say no. It's like, no, that's not an interesting question. Or, you know what? You can find that yourself. You can do a simple SQL query and get that what question answered yourself in 30 seconds if you understand SQL. Or you can go on Tableau, or you can go in this report, or you can go in the spreadsheet and just drill down and find the answer to that question, right? So, you know, and one issue with this kind of like work order type approach, where it's like the analytics team's constantly being inundated with these what questions, is that a first order request, a what question, almost always begets another first order request, another what question, right? Hey, that's interesting. Let me approach that what question from another angle, right? Can you check that for, okay, South Africa had that number of users. What about Brazil, right? Or whatever. And so, you know, these, what are seemingly like sort of trivial tasks, quick tasks, end up being a series of tasks that eat up the analytics team's time and don't allow them to answer the true like why and how questions. So that's one way analytics teams fail.
The sponsor of this week's episode of the Mobile Dev Memo podcast is Incremental. Is your iOS performance looking stranger and stranger? Do your decisions seem all wrong? Is your Facebook CPI above $50? If you know what I'm talking about, that's because the measurement paradigm has changed, but your tech stack hasn't. Incremental is the first and only always-on incrementality measurement that doesn't rely on user-level data or complex experiments, allowing you to get true value measurement for all of your channels, campaigns, and ad groups, whether you are on iOS, Android, influencers, TV, or even billboards. The platform is already used by some of the largest and most sophisticated advertisers in the mobile space. Join the future of marketing measurement today with Incremental. Google Incremental, the future of measurement, or use the link in this episode's description to learn more.
It sounds to me like you're describing that the analytics team needs to be proactive as opposed to reactive, as you already mentioned. They just need to have the autonomy to do what they feel is right that needs to be done. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah. No, totally. And actually, you know, a lot of that is dependent on the sort of, call it the, you know, the power of the analytics team lead, right? So it could be head of analytics, VP analytics, and sort of like the prominence of that person, and their sort of like visibility and call it gravitas in the company, right? And so what I've seen a lot of times is like, you know, you have a head of analytics or a VP of analytics who's just kind of like diminutive. They're not assertive, right? They their role has not been established as, you know, as leading like essentially a revenue driving function. They don't have the authority to kind of push back. And that's, again, like that's kind of just interpersonal dynamics. That's nothing really to do with like, you know, the approach that they're taking or the tools that they're using. But if this person can't be assertive and can't push back, then the analytics team will just get bogged down with this type of work.
That sounds kind of like a leadership ambiguity. To make an analogy, you could say that the Congress is constantly trying to redefine the role of the president or the speaker or something like that. Like you just have to have like finally well-defined roles for these people. And if you don't do that, then you end up with this ambiguity, not having the right person for the job, but maybe they don't know exactly what they're empowered to do, or they don't have the courage to do it, for example.
And also maybe they don't have the track record, right? So, you know, what might happen is they get hired in and they are given a tremendous amount of authority and they do feel empowered to say no, and they don't deliver. Right. And that's just a personnel problem. But like, you know, if you've got a track record of not actually delivering the insights that we need, it's like, okay, well, the product team's going to start dictating what they want because you obviously can't be trusted to provide it. Right.
Oh, yeah. A vacuum of power, you know, will get filled. Power vacuum, mm-hmm. whatever you call it. So you said that you had like this was the first one, the lack of agency and authority, I think is how you called it. What is second on this list? You said that you had a list for why analytics teams would fail.
That's right. So the second reason, second shortcoming or failure or whatever, is a lack of investment into infrastructure. Kind of related, right? But you know, for an analytics team to provide genuine value and drive revenue growth as a sort of revenue driving function, as a revenue generating function, it needs to be focused on the second order analysis, right? That, you know, these things that can produce product changes and new features that can actually drive the product forward. And so to do that, you need to be building actual tech, like actual infrastructure. And so I'm not just talking about like tools, right? Or, you know, like a reporting system or the pipeline, but you need to be able to deliver like these kind of like data products and actual the underlying processes that compute the insights. And so if you are focused on answering like the first order questions, right, you know, then you're not actually providing the infrastructure to the teams to find out the answers to the what questions themselves, right? So like it's not unreasonable, I think, to ask like a product manager or like a product analyst to understand SQL and to be able to do these kind of queries themselves, right? But that only scales so far, right? And so, you know, like just saying, you know, hey, you got to be able to query all this data yourself. What we provide is access to like a relational database. Well, that's probably not sufficient, right? That's not going to be very efficient for, you know, like the product manager be doing this. And so you not only need to like do the sort of like deep back-end engineering stuff to just collect the data and organize the data and collate the data, but you actually need to provide infrastructure and tools for the product teams themselves to sort of access insights. And so that is, you know, like, okay, well, we need to provide some kind of like visualizations and some kind of like filtering functionality and, you know, some sort of way to sort of get these sort of like second order insights out of just the raw data set, right? And so that is a problem in some orgs because, you know, sometimes these tools are expensive, right? And so like, okay, if you're brought in to lead an analytics team and you're given no budget, well, okay, you can spin up BigQuery and just have the data be aggregated there. But like, if no one can really access it, and not just access it, but access it in formats that actually drive decision-making, well then yeah, you're going to be answering a lot of first order questions.
Yeah, because you basically wouldn't be able to use the information that you have collected, even if you've bought the expensive tools.
Right. It's like, okay, well, asking, you know, a product manager to run a SQL query every once in a while is fine, but and maybe if it's like a one-off thing that is, you know, again, it's just interesting, like I can say no to that. But if it's actually something that's kind of like understanding this information is mission critical to their job, well, they're not going to want to do it all the time. That's not a reasonable thing to expect. And so, you know, you do need to provide some kind of front end that isn't just like basic data tabling, right? Because that, you know, you can say, hey, we're dumping everything into a Google sheet. What more do you want, right? You have access to it. Well, no, I mean, that's you know, maybe they could build some report on top of that. But the reality is to truly understand trends, it's not just like a line graph of certain things. I mean, in a lot of ways, you need to transform this data to come up with changes in change, right? What's the trend of the trend? You're going to be coming up with like a deeper sort of like analysis of the underlying data. You know, you're using statistical techniques to parse out statistical properties that is just not going to be plausible if all you have is access to the raw data. You're going to need to build like essentially like a table that processes the raw data and comes up with a trend. And so you can find the trend of the trend, right? And things like things of that nature. Like, so you're going to have to apply like statistical techniques to the raw data. And that's going to be the output that gets visualized, or that's going to be the output that gets presented to the product team, right? And so that's work. And not only that, you're going to need to find ways to visualize this or just present it, right? And such that it's not just a data table where I'm expected to kind of just like peruse it every single day, but you actually want to extract the insights out. And you know, there's tools to do that. So you could just buy an off-the-shelf tool, but that's expensive. And so if the analytics team has no budget and they just can't spend the money on those types of things, well, then they're going to have to try to build it themselves. And building it yourself is probably not practical, right? That's why these tools exist as SaaS products. And so, you know, if you just have no budget, you end up with a BigQuery table that everyone's expected to just query. And then it's only possible to answer first order questions. It's only possible to answer what questions, right? And so, and because those what questions are mission critical, right? And so they may be, like there's some of them that are to running the business, or it's just knowledge you need to have. And you're not providing the tools to even to get access to that every day in a way that can be easily interpreted and easily sort of, you know, embedded into the team's work. Well, then yeah, you're just going to get inundated with those types of questions.
Okay. The first two things on your list, they're both a lack of something, a lack of agency and authority, or a lack of investment in infrastructure. Is the third one also a dearth of something, or is it maybe something that's been mistakenly done?
Well, that's a good question. So it's actually, you know, the third reason that I present in this article is improper placement in the organization. So that's really just an organizational mistake.
How common would this happen?
It's fairly common, right? So, you know, it's actually like, it's quite tricky. It's quite tricky to get this right, right? So, you know, if the analytics team is designed, or if it's set up to be a revenue driver, right? It's designed to sort of be seen as something that like actively results in revenue growth, right? It contributes to revenue growth directly, then it's going to be closely aligned with the product team. And so, you know, you might say, well, hey, then the analytics team should report to the product team. Why doesn't the product lead or the head of product or the chief product officer, why don't they lead the analytics team? Why doesn't the head of analytics report to the CPO? Right. Well, because then they're not independent of the product team, and they're going to have a hard time saying no. And they're going to have a hard time saying, you know, look, the data doesn't support this decision that you're making. Right, they need to be independent of enough from the product team that they can actually say, you know what, I interpret this data differently. I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong about how you're, you know, utilizing what I've provided to you, the insights that I've provided to you to update your product roadmap. Like, I think you're making a mistake. If the product lead essentially, you know, runs the analytics team, or you know, they sort of manage the analytics leader, then they'll never have to hear that, or you know, they'll never have to. They can hear it, but they'll be in a superior position. They'll have like the hierarchical superiority to say, "Now, well, that's fine, but I just don't agree, and I'm going to do it anyway." right? So these teams need to work closely, but they need to work very independently, right? You know, the analytics team should be able to receive these fully formed requests from the product team and prioritize them or reject them and say no. Well, if your boss is telling you to do something, you know, it can be hard to say no, or it can be hard to like prioritize the request, you know, at the very end of the list and say, it's just not a priority, right? Because it's your boss, right? So, okay, so they shouldn't report to the product team most likely, but who should they report to? Well, you know, there's ways to structure this that, you know, maybe are not as problematic, but nonetheless are like unproductive, right? So, you know, the CFO, for instance, maybe is not the right person for the head of analytics or the VP of analytics or whoever the analytics lead to report into, right? Because, you know, the CFO may have a hard time evaluating the importance of the analytics team's work, right? And the CFO is just not as connected to the value proposition. Like they're just going to see a cost center here. They're going to see, okay, well, all these tools cost a lot of money. Can we cut down on this? And there's probably not going to be that same sort of deep understanding of the impact, right? You know, on the product. Like if you're only sort of analyzing this, you know, this function as through the lens of expense, right? Because you're also going to need to sort of understand like, well, what's the return on this expense? Like this is an investment. It's not an expense. It's an investment into revenue growth, right? At the same time, like the CTO maybe is a bad option as a sort of boss for the head of analytics because they're going to want to build everything themselves. They're going to say, no, well, I'm CTO. My whole job is to build tech, right? So why are you licensing this tool? Why don't I just build it? We'll build it for you, and it'll take 8 months, right? Or yeah, we'll get it done quickly. We cut a few corners, but it should work just fine. And then you know it crashes every 2 weeks, like the data pipeline breaks or something like that. So there's no, and I would say like you know the issue here is not that there's a right organizational structure. There's not. It's going to be very contextually dependent. But this is one reason why analytics teams fail. It's just the reporting lines are not sensible, right? And so this will be very, this you know, the right answer here for any given company is going to be very dependent on the personalities involved, right? The degree of autonomy that the analytics teams has. But there are like, there's problematic configurations generally that may actually work well in some specific context. But, you know, these are reasons why the analytics team could fail on this basis. The reason why the analytics teams could fail on the basis of improper placement is because there could be conflicts with having the product team sort of absorb the analytics team, or because, you know, the CTO might be more inclined to build than buy. And so those are just things to be cognizant of.
It sounds to me like you were saying that the third point, improper replacement in the organization, is actually more of like a two-pronged point, because you specifically talked about communication between these two teams, the product team and the analytics team. Is communication really that important? Of course it is.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, you know, and communication, mutual respect, but then also, you know, the ability for a product team, because it's one issue with product teams and product leaders in general, right, is they view their role as being originator of all product ideas, right? And so the data is there maybe to direct that, but the data is not there to dictate that. And, right. You know, they can get very sensitive about that. They could see that as an imposition.
I have a couple more questions I'd like to ask, but before I get to that, I do have one question that basically would be a summary of this entire interview so far, and I want you to be very blunt when you answer it. What happens if the analytics team fails in one or more of these three criteria on your list?
Well, it's very bad if that happens. I mean, a lot of times when I've seen analytics teams fail, like genuinely fail, like they're no longer productive. They're you know, either they're bogged down in these like one-off requests and they're not delivering true insight, or you know, they just they're not able to maintain the infrastructure. I mean, the only way to address that, the only way to fix it is a personnel change. You just need to get a different leader in there.
What happens if you don't? Can it cause the company to fail?
Yeah, I mean, it can be extraordinarily damaging to the company's general operations. I mean, analytics really is sitting at the very heart of the company's ability to change its product and to improve its product. If you don't have that, you could enter some, you know, just stasis where nothing's really happening. And you know, that's not like a sort of totally abstract, unrealistic hypothetical. Like I've seen that happen. It's like you do not have functional analytics. The product team does not know what to do, you know, and in some cases it could be the finance team is sort of like, is not informed enough to make, you know, capital allocation decisions. It could be a huge problem.
So like a headless chicken.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. Would you be willing to give some examples of companies where you've seen this happen, or you don't want to
no.
name names?
No, I'm not going to name names, no.
Well, at the beginning, I mentioned that this article was from 2016, and you said that these analytics teams, a lot of this, it's going to change. You have to talk about how the change changes and so on. But there's one major change that's happened in the past year and a half. We've all heard about it. We hear about it on a daily basis. What do you think is going to be the impact of AI on analytics teams? Is it going to be good, bad? Is it going to throw people out of their jobs? Is it going to make things better?
No, I mean, I think... So with analytics, I mean, you know, there's ways to sort of like apply generative AI to some of the sourcing of insights, right? In ways that, you know, probably displace like kind of manual analyst effort. But in general, I mean, I think if you have good people and you have people that can operate like at a very high level, it's nothing but good news, right? It's like, okay, well, this is taking a lot of this manual work off of my plate and allowing me to apply my human creativity in ways that, you know, I didn't have time to before, right? Because I just like this table stakes analysis just had to get done. Someone had to do it. And so my sense is like, yeah, I mean, look, I mean, generative AI, you know, at the end of the day, artificial intelligence, I mean, it's kind of right there in the name. It's designed to be a substitute for human efforts. But my sense is like broadly, there's no real reason to be super pessimistic about this from an analytics perspective, because I think generally speaking, it's difficult to hire for analytics roles. It's difficult to find really good analysts that provide a lot of value. And there's a high degree of competition for them, you know, and the labor market for analytics roles is fairly tight. And I think that remains to be true. And the best ones were capable of doing more than what they've been doing, because they've probably been having to dedicate a lot of their time to like manual tasks that they wish could have been automated with some sort of AI tool. So my sense is like, this is probably nothing but good news. It just allows better insights to be discovered as these people free up more of their time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. Are there any final things that you'd like to say?
Thanks. This is a fun first episode in the series.
It is. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.